Here we go.
There's a drive.
Welcome into the drive.
It's all about intensity.
Swing and a drive.
Don't get out tough. Don't let them rain threes on you.
High drive to left field.
That was incredible.
I think this team showed their full arsenal.
The drive of the game.
So what? The teams are coming after you. Go after them.
Fully impressed with the team effort.
Swing and a drive, and that ball is absolutely right.
Lon finally hit the irrational button.
And he drives one.
Coach Derek Piper here.
Happy to be joined by Josh Whitman,
Brad Underwood,
Brett Bielema, Illinois football coach. How are you, sir?
Let's go for a little ride.
And good morning. It is The Drive, ESPN Radio 93.5. I just looked at Derek Piper and said, I need a drink. But what I meant is my water right here. But then I started thinking about this Cardinals four-game sweep at the hands of the Reds, and I'm like, maybe I do need another drink.
You asked me in the hallway, am I sober? And I I am. That is confirmed. Maybe I shouldn't be.
Well, it was
after
bachelor weekend.
Oof, watching that in St. Louis.
Oh, my.
I only went to one game, so it's not like I attended the four-game slate and I was the reason they lost all four. I was there Saturday.
Okay.
And we did drop that, as well as all of them, against the Reds.
But you're kind of the common denominator, so we have to blame you for this. We will talk about that as we roll along. He is Derek Piper. I'm Lonte. Trevor Valise here as well. He just mentioned the Cubs and Cardinals went 1-7 this weekend, and the Cubs actually gained a game on the Cardinals. At least the Cubs were playing a really good team. Meanwhile, I'm sure Dan Hartlib's itching to just call the show right now and talk about a four-game sweep in St. Louis by the Cincinnati Reds. Incredible stuff. All right, we've got a lot going on. Today, Chris Block from Chris Block Racing Stables. Of course, we've got, what is the Preakness, right, is coming up? I always get them, or is it Belmont? Oh, my.
I think it's the Belmont.
Okay, it's the Belmont. Yeah, Preakness is second leg. We've got that coming up, plus the news on Bob Baffert, who we had mentioned last week. Baffert, of course, has been now suspended for 2 years from Churchill Downs due to his horse that won the Kentucky Derby.
The Belmont was this past week.
Okay, so it's, all right, that's my bad.
And that was the third leg.
That was the third. Oh, it's over. Oh, man, that's okay. That flew right by me. I didn't realize that. When you're doing this travel baseball stuff, you know, you just kind of leave for a weekend. We were in Peoria. And you don't, that is the best thing about Cardinals baseball. I didn't get a chance to watch any of the games except for Thursday night. So it was just like one of those where, oh, they lost again. Oh, they lost again. Now I was upset, but it's not like 3 hours of being upset watching. So that's a little bit frustrating. So the Belmont is over. We can talk about the horse racing, the three big races with Chris, and kind of break down Bob Baffert. I know he's got some things he wants to talk about with regards to that. Cliff from Urbana, our buddy, who is one of the bigger soccer fans I've ever met. He, of course, is more of an expert than any one of us. And USA Soccer played Mexico last night down in Denver, and USA won 3-2. It's in the CONCAF, CAF, K, CAF thing. It's like, there's like 38 syllables. I don't know what any of them means. But I know that the World Cup qualifying, we're like a month from that. So this was a nice little tune-up, and for the United States, a young team, to up in Mexico, and it got a little hairy, got a little ugly.
Oh, man.
What is up with crowds now thinking they need to throw things at athletes? Don't you think, I mean, is this the opposite of what you thought when crowds could come back?
Yeah, I did. I think that, well, there is the two different, you forget how to act because you haven't been in the
arena
for a while, and you're that amped up to be back. At the same time, you would just feel like you're so appreciative to be in the building,
right?
Not going to be messing anything up or anything along those lines. But the crowd for Team Mexico last night was surpassing what's been going
anything.
On in the NBA. Now, spitting on Trae Young at Madison Square Garden, that's about as bad as it gets. But
yep,
we saw people getting hit in the fills and
that's
full
dangerous.
Cups of Coke. And
yeah. That's dangerous. So they don't like to lose, I guess. El Tri, I think is what they call him. Cliff was trying. I'm not going to act like I know what I'm talking about. It's something to do with the Mexican flag. Three colors, so they call him El Tri, is what he was saying.
And there was a stoppage for a derogatory chant. And then there was happens again, we'll play the rest of the game tomorrow. Match, I should say, technically for...
With no crowd.
The soccer enthusiast, which there was a great showing in Denver for that match. And I actually watched a decent amount, especially after halftime. I watched the second half and into extra time. It was pretty exhilarating. It was a very entertaining match, and it did... Between the players, which you're fine with, then mixing it up and showing some emotion.
Absolutely.
And maybe even if it gets a little physical, but the crowd to do what they did was not classy.
It sounds like you saw the best half, because it sounds like early on in that game, Mexico scored like 64 seconds into the game, I think. It felt like the United States, who don't get me going on USA soccer on the male side especially, but it sounds like it was just one of those games where it's like, oh no. We're on a prime stage, and here we go. We're going to show how not good we are, basically, at soccer. But to their credit, they really rallied and, of course, beat Mexico 3-2. So that's got to give them a little bit of juice going into the World Cup qualifying. I mean, for this United States men's team, truly, Derek, it's all about qualifying for the World Cup. Now, don't get me wrong. If they do qualify... And I become a huge soccer fan all of a sudden. I do it every time the United States is in the World Cup, whether it be male or female. I all of a sudden am like the biggest soccer fan you'll ever meet. If they do qualify, that'll be great. And I'm sure that if they then kind of fall flat, we'll still be frustrated. But the fact that the last time this happened, they didn't even qualify for the World Cup. And it just seems absurd that the country of the United States, maybe I'm showing my ignorance, maybe I'm showing my brass and arrogance, but it seems as brash, excuse me, it seems as though the United States should have a team in the World Cup every year. That's just me. Now, I get all the arguments that our best athletes play basketball. I mean, like, we've always...
Basketball or football.
Football, anything like that.
Maybe.
We've always joked, like, LeBron James. Can you imagine him out there playing soccer? I'm sure he would be unstoppable. Maybe not. But the point is, I get why... The United States hasn't really gotten to that level. But then you look on the other side, the United States women, they dominate.
Superb.
So I don't understand that, but we'll talk to Cliff and kind of get his thoughts on that as well. Joey Wagner, now with the Illini Inquirer. You know Joey. I do as well. I've never met Joey. One of these days, I'm going to meet
Joey.
Good guy. He is going to touch base on all of these recruits coming into town with Brett Bielema and Illinois football. I mean, they've had just a list, just nonstop. And from every story I read in Illini Inquirer, it sounds like this coaching staff is, excuse the really weak pun here, but are hitting home runs with every one of them. I mean, they are fully prepared. They know every family member's name. I mean, it's just everything about it is this Illinois staff showing these guys exactly what this family, as Brett Bielema likes to use with the ILL, in the middle, is really intent on getting the state of Illinois covered when it comes to recruiting, and also just getting some names in here and showing a lot of enthusiasm for these recruits that are coming in to visit, especially in June, which is when you could start doing it for the first time in what seemed like 8 years.
Yeah, they're creating some momentum, as you like to say, and creating a buzz and being able to get some quality kids on campus. And you look at their 2022 class, currently they have 9 commits, top 30 in the country right now. Now they don't have a 4-star yet. You see quite a few. Most of it is 3-star talents, which that's not to knock or say that's a bad thing. In total, when you do the calculation for 24/7, 6th in the Big Ten. We've seen so many classes with Lovie Smith outside of the one where they got Beeson and Isaiah and Shimon at the top, where you were towards the bottom of the Big Ten ranking. We'll see. There's still a lot of time for it to shake out, but you want to see staffs be able to capitalize on this first opportunity in 15 months to have kids on campus, to show off the facility, to meet with a new coaching staff, and again, just kind of create a buzz around the program. And it does seem that right now that they are being successful in that venture. And yeah, it's good to see.
It's amazing when I see the pictures, not video, I see the pictures of that brand new facility and the recruits walking around, seeing their locker room. I've seen video of the putt-putt course up on the concourse. When you see those pictures, I truly believe when these recruits and this coaching staff says that it is one of the top facilities in the country. I haven't been to many, if at all, any, to be honest with you. And to be able to, well, I guess I've been to a couple. But to see it or to see the pictures, it just shows. And Derek, I know a lot of that is still about relationships. You have to like the coach. You have to have a good feel when you get to campus. The parents have to feel like their son or daughter, well, in this case in football, son, would be someone that is, you know, going to fit in. The coaches are going to take care of them. But it doesn't hurt to be able to show off a shiny new object as impressive as that thing.
No, it needs to be easy to show off.
Yes.
And, again, we still have to see it play out, but I don't think anyone's going to argue, and even this early in the process, the way that Brett Bielema has shown a excitement for recruiting and involvement and a commitment, especially in the state, to sell the program, to sell the facilities and everything that Illinois football can provide, that should be resonating with people, and it sounds like it does. It's good to see and scroll down the list and see in-state kids, and you do want those that are in that top 10 range as far as, you know, the top 10 prospects in the state, which you don't have quite yet, but you're seeing these quotes and who they're bringing in and just the priority in state and just to get some quality recruits on campus, and they're doing that.
I'll say this. A lot of times, and I did this with Lovie Smith, I probably did this with Tim Beckman, whenever a new coach comes in, they can't do anything wrong. And you feel like before the first game, before their first win or loss, we're always touting what they're doing. We're always talking about how impressive it is. I'm sure it is like a record that just keeps skipping. And I totally agree with the listeners sometimes that bash us for that. And I will take all the credit for the bashing that we deserve to get, because too many times I'm just way too optimistic about this. There's a couple of things that I want to say about this. The top 10, as you talked about, recruits in the state of Illinois. Illinois wasn't getting those for the last 3 or 4 or 5, whatever years, right? So the fact that Brett Bielema gets into, you know, pretty much what would be called a late start on these kids this season,
right?
It's a lot to ask to all of a sudden flip these kids who are basically getting offers from Notre Dame, Ohio State, and the like, right? It's hard to go in and flip that script. And I understand that some of these kids that they're getting, commitments from are kids that one of them didn't even have another Division I offer. So I understand that, and I see that. The one thing that I will say is that I love the way they're going about this. Essentially saying, we are going to get as many of these Illinois kids as we can. Now, they're also looking, obviously, at other places, the Haydens, et cetera. I mean, there are other recruits. The very first recruit was from, Arkansas, I believe, the running back. So there's obviously, it's not just about in-state, but what you like about it is that it builds momentum. That's the word you used earlier on a different topic, but it builds the idea that now these kids are being coveted and you mean something again to this Illinois football program, because the last staff, and I'm not blaming the entire staff, but it felt like Illinois kids became kind of a secondary thing as opposed to kids from other states. So while you're bringing in some of these recruits that are 3-star recruits, probably not kids that are going to shine for you, let's say, the idea that you're building the momentum, you're showing coaches and players that, yes, we do care about you, I think is a wonderful idea, because it's only going to help in year 2, in year 3, and especially year 4 and beyond, when Coach Bielema and the staff, who sounds like a dynamite staff. That's, sorry to use the 70s term. But it sounds like they are really locking in and getting great relationships with these schools for down the road. And I'm not just throwing aside these kids either. These are depth pieces. Who knows if these don't grow into kind of like Brett Bielema. We've always talked about how that's the idea that Barry Alvarez started at Wisconsin in terms of just locking down 3-star kind of guys, if you will, in Wisconsin, and just all they're doing is building them up to where they're juniors and they're ready to go. And, you know, a 3-star kid, if you're built and you're taught the correct way, by the time they play, maybe a 4-star. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they wouldn't be rated a 4-star, but they may play like a 4-star. So I like the idea. I don't want to sit here and just be like, oh, it's incredible what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But I like the tactic. I like the idea of building the momentum like they have. And I think it's a brilliant move on Brett Bielema and this Illini coaching staff's part.
Yeah, I think you make good points. You do look at the top 10 in 2022 as far as the rankings go, and the top player in the state who's number 10 in the country. I didn't know that. East St. Louis is going to Oklahoma already. Number 3 is going to Michigan. 3 of the top 10 already signed up Northwestern. It's going to take a little bit of time,
no doubt,
to show the state, hey, we're on par. It's kind of crazy to even say that we're on par with Northwestern at that point, or you know, pushing past them at all. But hey, what Pat Fitzgerald's done and what that program is doing. But you do make a good point as far as just the relationships with certain places. They've got 2 commits from Joliet Catholic, which has been a really good program for a long time. Brother Rice, I see that. Hank Beatty's from Rochester. Yes. He's won a lot of games. So maybe even, I don't know these players well enough to say this 3-star is going to develop and be a stud. You. But maybe at the very least, a commit like that leads to more down the road, a good relationship with that program. And again, when we were having conversations with high school coaches, well-known ones,
right,
a couple months ago or before Brett Bielema was hired, like, we didn't really hear from Illinois. We don't really know Lovie Smith. That change in narrative and that change in just perception and momentum is a positive thing at the very least.
I think that's fair. And I just want everybody to know, we understand these aren't 5-star guys. These aren't the best of the best right now in the state of Illinois that are committing to Illinois. But the idea is you're building that momentum. You're building that relationship. Really, you're building the thought process of it's cool again to go to the University of Illinois if you're a football player in the state of Illinois. And that will help. I really, truly believe that will help down the road. I have watched this mad scientist thing for most of my life, trying to figure out what formulas will work to make Illinois a football program that maybe not gets to Ohio State's level, but certainly a level to where you're winning 7 or 8 games most of the time. And I don't know. I don't know that any formula has ever necessarily worked. We know it hasn't worked over a length of time. Certainly, Mike White had some really good teams. John Makovic was probably the one that he came in on the coattails of White and did an exceptional job. And I feel like if Makovic would have stayed, then I think he would have obviously built something here for maybe more than even 9 or 10, maybe 10 years, let's say. Other than that, we don't know. We hired Tim Beckman. You thought, all right, I mean, that was a major disaster, to be honest with you. But you thought, okay, we're getting a guy out of, what, Toledo, I think? You know, a MAC coach that really coaches him. That didn't work.
After you had Zook before that, who at the very initial part recruited well and was, this guy can bring in players, bring in Vontae Davis, Aurelius Ben, Martez out of Chicago, and it worked.
It did.
For a while.
It did.
But then you weren't recruiting at that same level, and then you had the lapses in coaching and everything.
Exactly.
So that was different. But
and really, the Zook era is the last era that produced kind of even a good season on occasion, right?
Yeah.
We never had that with Beckman. You didn't have that with Bill Cubitt. You didn't have that with Lovie Smith. So even then, it's one of those situations where somehow Illinois went backwards from even coaches like Ron Turner that would win a Big Ten title and then win 0 games the next year, which is so infuriating, but yet at least you got that Big Ten title in 01, and Ron Zook, who would get you to a bowl game and then maybe win 4 games, then 5, and then all of a sudden you're back in a bowl game. It's that idea of staying there. I don't know that Brett Bielema can do it. I have no idea if this new formula is the one that's finally going to work in that chemistry room. But, man, I'm ready to give it a shot with him because I feel like since he's had success in the Big Ten, he can at least have an idea. I was about ready to say a thumbprint. An idea on how to at least go at it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the way he's going at it is one thing that I don't know that it's been tried. And I'm here. What else are we going to do?
Yeah.
I'm here to see if it works.
It's the pivot point because with Lovie Smith, it was like, okay, there's a disconnect in state.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, and we found out at the end of the road, like it had a lot to do with the head coach and what,
no doubt,
what he was putting into it. But okay, if the state's not going to show the love back to us, we're just going to go elsewhere. We're going to try to find talent other places. And it just, there wasn't enough. You shouldn't be at a point where you got to say completely no to the state while the state's saying no to you. You got to be able to recruit some of that talent. You can't be just fully married to it. We can only get players from Illinois, and if we don't get them,
absolutely,
then, we're not going to be a good program. But as you also brought up, it might take, I mean, it's reasonable to expect it might take a season where players from the state or wherever see, okay, this is what Illinois looks like under Brett Bielema. We get that chance this fall. We've already talked about the value of having players returning, the roster being solid. That could, if him and his staff were able to elevate, you know, what Lovey and that group wasn't able to do last year, get them to six, get them to seven, then you're starting to see that momentum. But you are just perception-wise feeling good about people are buying in.
I totally
agree. That's a good thing.
I'm telling you what, we need to have a segment about what this season could mean to Illinois football, like for the next 10 years. We need to have a segment about that. The idea that you get a lot of these fifth-year, what do they call them, super seniors?
Yep.
You get a lot of those guys back for depth. Your offensive and defensive line should be halfway solid, I would think, and maybe even better than that.
Definitely your offensive line.
For sure. It's just going to be, I think, imperative for this group this year to go out with a first-year coach and win like 7 games. I don't know that it'll happen. But it would be such a huge boost. What Illinois coach, I mean, hardly ever do they come in here in that first year win, get you to a bowl game. It's just very rare because normally the reason they're here is because the last coach is gone. And that is the reason Coach Bielma's here. But the super seniors coming back, including Mike Epstein, who we heard over the weekend, I think just gives this program a chance in the first year of Brett Bielma to really show what it can do and then build on that. So we'll have to do a segment on that eventually. Here's what we're going to do. Take a quick break. When we come back, Chris Block, Block Racing Stables, we're going to talk horse racing. We're going to talk soccer. We're going to talk Illinois football recruiting. Anything to not talk about. And I'll even throw the Cubs in this one since they lost 3 of 4. Anything not to talk about baseball today, if that's fair. Because the Cardinals are woeful and it's embarrassing. And I know they're injured, yada, yada, yada. Embarrassing is what that is. To lose 4 straight to Cincinnati at Busch Stadium is really, really bad. All right, Chris Block, when we come back, if you want to weigh in on the U of I Illini Link text line, Lindy did with the lawn with the captain obvious quote of the day, they don't like to lose. That's me, Lindy, always stating the obvious. There's no doubt about that. Almost like the Cardinals really being bad right now. That's an obvious. Follow us on Twitter, at TheDrive93.5. I'm at Lonte, ESPN. See you.
I'm at DPiper247. Our podcasts are on all platforms, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also go to TanePiper.podbean.com. Stream us live at StevieJ.com, StevieJay.com. You can watch us live on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, or Twitter. Just search Tane Piper or TheDrive93.5.
Chris Block next. The Drive.
Here's what people are saying about PDR Automotive in Urbana. The following reviews are from actual customers in the last 5 months. They were kind and helpful. They offered a very thorough evaluation. Their staff was friendly and attentive. They were quick, reasonably priced, and kept me informed during the process. They did a great job with what I requested. They were very professional, and it was a great overall experience. If you're looking for an honest automobile mechanic that will fix your car the first time, visit PDR Automotive on Cunningham Avenue in Urbana.
Hi, I'm Troy Lands, owner of Lands, Inc. Your heating and cooling system works hard for you all year long to keep you and your family comfortable. That's why it's important to have it maintained and serviced regularly. Our techs are ready to help you with all your indoor air quality, humidity, and filtration needs. Visit LandsInc.com today for specials on a brand new train system for your home and to see for yourself why it's hard to stop a train. At Lands, Inc., our commitment is to you, the customer. I'm Troy Lands, and you can count on my company because you can count on me.
Long's Garage in Urbana is the oldest auto repair facility in the area. In fact, they've been in business 80 years. That spanned 20 presidential elections. The population of Champaign-Urbana 80 years ago was around 23,000. Now it's over 210,000, and Long's is still proudly serving all of them. There aren't many places that can survive and thrive through 80 years of outstanding service, so give Long's a shot at 503 East Main Street in Urbana or online at longsautomotiverepair.com.
Make Flooring Surfaces your first stop for new floors in Champaign. A beautiful showroom is filled with the latest on-trend fashions, with flooring pros on hand that provide design assistance and expert advice free of charge. Flooring Surfaces can get you the right tools to tackle projects yourself or provide professional installation service for all kinds of flooring. And with special sale pricing on dozens of flooring options, finding your next project couldn't be easier. See Flooring Surfaces today at 401 East Mercury Drive in Champaign.
The carts are rolling at Willow Pond Golf Club in Rantoul. Ride the course in a brand new EasyGo cart. $30 weekdays, $40 weekends includes the cart. grab your sticks and play some rounds. Then enjoy the relaxed atmosphere of the 19th Hole Restaurant and Bar, serving locally sourced produce and meats with daily specials and fish Fridays. Enjoy drinks on the outdoor deck or try your luck in the new private gaming area. A day at Willow Pond Golf Club in Rantoul is more than just golf. Make it your favorite spot for good food and great times with friends.
Diane Ducey with my friends at Profile by Sanford. And let's face it, when it comes to losing weight, most of us don't care how we get there. Once we reach our goal, most of us end up right back where we started and gain it all back. That's what I love about Profile. In it for the long haul. Knowing that losing weight isn't always a straight line, there's lots of ups and downs. I'm so thankful for my Profile coach, helping keep me on track when I need it the most. Get that free consultation over by AMC Theater in Champaign. Use the code DD when you visit their website, ProfilePlan.com.
Hey, Line 9 fans, it's Georgia B. Catch my boys Lante and Derek Piper weekdays from 4 to 6 on The Drive. Boom, boom, brr.
Radio 93.5. Lante, Derek Piper, Trevor Valise here as well. We mentioned this last week, Bob Baffert being suspended essentially from Churchill Downs. He cannot race either him or, in other words, well, he's not going to race a horse that he trains or Bob Baffert Racing Stable, a horse that they train, however that works, we can ask Chris that, cannot run at Churchill Downs for the next 2 years, essentially missing, I believe, two Kentucky Derbies. We bring in Chris Block, Block Racing, Chris Block Racing Stables. How are you, Chris?
I'm good, Lon. How are you guys today?
We are great. I know I had contacted you last week, and I know this, I don't want to say it's old news, but this came out last week, but you were extremely busy, and we finally have a chance to chat now. So, you know, Bob Baffert, like him or not, is a guy that has produced four, he's trained four Kentucky Derby winners. He's a big shot, if you will, when it comes to the horse racing scene. And for this to happen and now basically be suspended essentially for 2 years from the biggest track out there, what kind of a message does this send to the rest of horse racing?
Well, it certainly sends a message, which is what Churchill was looking for, to the general public. Not so much the horsemen or the thoroughbred racing industry, because there's various opinions on the Medina Spirit situation. But Churchill did what they thought they needed to do to save the reputation or try to keep it intact as much as possible of the Kentucky Derby for their purposes, of which is what Churchill Downs is the Kentucky Derby. So,
right.
In other words, what I'm saying is the public perception out there right now amongst the general public is that, you know, this horse was juiced. To say that this horse was juiced to win the Kentucky Derby, they're wanting to send the message to the public and America to say, hey, we don't want you to think that that's going to happen in the future, because we're penalizing Bob Baffert for what he's done, and we're taking a stand against that, something like that happening going forward. So I thought it was a very strong move. I don't know that it was real surprising. But because, you know, I think they that's coveted by that corporation, and that's who they are. It's the Derby, and they want to make sure that their reputation holds up. So that's why they moved in that direction.
Chris, as someone who's very familiar with the industry, could you explain, to hear Bob Baffert Racing is kind of that whole umbrella, who else does that impact as far as how many horses, who else as far as people affiliated with Bob will be infected by this, with this, the two-year banning from Churchill Downs?
Well, it's going to have, this is going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. There are, with the Kentucky Derby, there's a point system. So each race, Derby prep, holds points that go to that horse for finishing first, second, or third. And in order to get into the top 20, to get there, you got to have the most points to get there. So the question was, and up until I believe 48 hours ago, when after Churchill made this announcement of banning for 2 years, would those horses that Bob trains from, let's say, when they start running these two-year-olds in the fall all the way up until May 1st, if they run and gather points, will Bob Baffert be able and his owner be able to call up Chris Block and say, okay, Chris, May or April 15th, I'm going to transfer this horse to you. You take it to the Derby. Well, then Churchill has put a kibosh on that. No horses in his stable can accumulate any points within those prep races and take them to the Derby. So this literally takes Bob out of the Derby for the next 2 years, and those clientele who have migrated to him over the years, and he's got a long list of some of the premier ones in the country, they're going to have some hard decisions to make now, because there's no way their horse can make it to the Derby under his under his care.
And, you know, I had somebody ask me that today, isn't there a way around it? But you just answered that. So let me ask you this, and we'll use you as the example. So if Lante has a horse that Bob Baffert was going to train, and I knew for a fact that this horse had the ability to at least make a run at the Kentucky Derby, if I left today on June 7th and I brought my horse to Chris Block Racing Stables, would I then be eligible?
Yes, you would be. And the reason why is that none of those horses have accumulated any points, have run any of those races, and then that said trainer would then take that horse forward and run in those races, hopefully, if it makes it to that point, accumulate the points, and then be eligible for the Derby. He's not going to be able to take any of those horses. And here's something else that's very interesting. He has, and everybody's seen this, he has an assistant named Jimmy Barnes. Jimmy's been with him for a long, long time. Jimmy's probably could go out on his own and run his own stable, but he's probably doing very, very well working for Bob. Bob cannot transfer those horses to Jimmy either. He can't. They specifically said that none of those horses can run under Baffert's name and then be transferred to Jimmy and then go on, toward the Derby. So they've basically eliminated the Baffert stable from the Kentucky Derby or the Triple Crown, even. Okay. For the next 2 years, there's no way around that, and they're gonna this not something they're gonna watch and say if he keeps a decent record or a good record, well, we'll let him off after the first year. No, they've put a ban of 2 years on it, and he's out for 2 years.
Wow,
Chris, we know that the casual fan around the Triple Crown gets invested, gets interested. We'll watch the Derby, watch the Preakness, the Belmont. What do you think, and this brought more attention to it if it maybe wasn't there anyway. Sure. Now, some of it would be negative, or let's put the sport in a negative light. What do you think the ultimate takeaway from this will be down the road? Do you think that the strong ruling, obviously you would think, puts the sport in a good light or shows that they're not messing around with this? How much of a – does this move the needle, do you think, this kind of a very public, popular name getting this kind of a punishment?
Well, I think it's something that needs to be done, and I think because certainly horse racing has had its problems, okay, and it's become very polarized at the top, and we're all the wagering dollar that goes out there on these horses is actually very strong right now. I mean, I think the Belmont this last week set some records. Handle was extremely strong. So horse racing out there in the public eye is actually getting plenty of play on it from the wagering standpoint. And I think that in order to instill the confidence in those people who are making those wagers, Churchill looked at this and said, this is the only way to do that is to make sure that these people understand we're not just glossing over this and saying, okay, we're going to disqualify Medina Spirit. We're actually going to penalize the guy who was responsible for that horse testing positive for that drug. And therefore, we need to keep the confidence of the people that are out there wagering. Now, remember, Churchill Downs not only has the Kentucky Derby, but they have an account deposit wagering platform called Twin Spires. It generates billions of dollars okay, of wagering on it, of which Churchill makes hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues off of. So they're also looking at it from that standpoint, that they have the reputation of the Derby. They also have this wagering platform, of which is very, very strong throughout the, you know, horse racing in general for the whole year, but also really, really strong for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. So Bob made a huge mistake that he's going to pay dearly for, because, you know, he it's going to be tough for him to come back after 2 years off, and he'll be back. He'll be back.
Sure.
But this really, when you have the momentum he has, this is cutting him off at the knees, and it's going to be tough for him. And a lot of people in the industry aren't feeling sorry for him, because, you know, he had, like I said, I think on the last show we did together, you know, he has a string of bad tests that have caused him to be in the spotlight.
Right.
It's caused him to be his attorney being on CNN on a morning there, getting grilled by those anchors. You know, that's he's putting himself in that position, and therefore Churchill said, you know what, we're going to take a stand, and we're going to show the general public that this is not tolerated.
We are so lucky to have Chris Block, Chris Block Racing Stables. He's a local young man, went to Villagrove High School. He's older than me, so I'll just throw that out there so everybody knows. I'm kidding. Hey, well, I'm not kidding. He is older than me. Chris, I'll ask you this. Was it arrogance? I mean, this is the fifth time, right, this year that it's happened to a Baffert horse. Could this just be accident after accident after accident? Is this Bob Baffert's arrogance? What do you think?
I think it's a little arrogance, yes. I think that he like, now remember, this is a therapeutic drug. These are not performance enhancing drugs that he's been caught with, okay?
Okay.
So therefore he can use those. But again, there's a withdrawal period that he's certainly well aware of, or if he's not not paying attention, then he's really, really neglecting what he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
But he should know that, along with his veterinarian, to know that, okay, this is where we take this drug. We have to withdraw so far out from the race, so we're not catching the positive like they did with Medina Spirit and the others that he's had. He should know that, but he's flirting, I think, inside of that timetable, trying to maybe take a little edge, okay?
Okay.
Now, again, these are not what I call performance enhancing, but they have some effect that could help the horse run to his ability, not beyond his ability, but to his ability. Okay, so yes, I think in order for him to have all these strung together, he has to be just kind of throwing a little caution to the wind, hoping that he can get through. And he's beat. Now remember, he's beat the tests he's beat the positives. In Arkansas, he beat those two out there last year, where he had two positives in big races there, in the Arkansas Derby, and I believe there was another grade one there that he had. I think the filly Gamine tested positive out there. No, that was an allowance race she ran. And he got positives there, but he beat it. He went in front of the commission.
Interesting.
And he said it was contamination. He used that as his defense, and he got through those. And he thinks that he could get through those probably as he goes forward. I'm sure he wasn't expecting this one, okay?
Exactly.
And they're saying that it was this topical ointment that they put on this skin rash. And I think, personally, if that's what he did, I think they took it too light. I don't think they paid much attention to what they were doing. I think they thought, it's a skin rash. It's a salve we're putting on there. Well, if you look on the ingredients of what's in that salve, it's right there. It's in print. It says what that drug that he got positive for is right there. And they know that's one of the ones that you're not allowed to have inside of the 14 days. And they said they put this on him all the way up until the day before the Derby.
Wow.
So he was reckless with that. And his veterinarian should take some criticism here. He should have known that and should have been aware of that as well.
Sure. I mean, rules are rules, right? Last one from me. I know that Bob Baffert, I think, and well, yes or no, Chris, can he then run horses in the Belmont and Preakness? That's a yes, correct?
As of today, yes, that's correct. Now, when the Kentucky Racing Commission comes down, I believe he's going to get suspended as well for probably at the least, very least, maybe like 30 days. Okay, so he's not going to be able. Now he'll have to take that suspension, you know, unless he tries to fight it and he'll eventually lose it. He could push that off, but he's going to have to some point serve 30 days. Okay, so right now he's not allowed to run in New York because they put a ban on him in New York for. And they didn't put a timetable on that.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure by this time next year when the Belmont comes around, that'll probably be lifted. But unless they take a stance against it, and the Preakness definitely didn't because they let Medina Spirit come there and run.
Sure.
And the Belmont, I believe, they came out and said he was on a suspension there, indefinite suspension. I think that if Medina Spirit would have won the Preakness, they probably wouldn't have put that suspension in. They would have wanted that horse there to try to,
absolutely.
Even though he was still unsure what the test was going to come back in Kentucky, they would have probably would have, you know, not put that in effect until after the Belmont.
That's fair.
But I think he'll be allowed to run probably in Maryland and New York next year, but he's certainly not getting in at Churchill Downs anytime soon.
So that leads me to my question. If go back to the example where I have a horse that I feel like could run the Derby and at least, you know, push for a Triple Crown, is the Kentucky Derby that important that people will take that horse to a different stable, even though they know that that horse could run Preakness and Belmont, two of the three legs? And if you win those two, if you win one of those two, you're still making some bucks. You're still, you know, doing your thing, I guess. But is the Derby that big to where you think people will start taking their horses elsewhere for the next 2 years?
I certainly do. And the reason why is you can't become a Triple Crown winner unless you win the first one, which is the Derby.
Amen.
And there's so much value that goes with the horse that wins the Derby and potentially the Triple Crown for stud value later on,
right,
after retirement. That you can't miss the Derby. You have to get to that. That's the race that's most coveted. That's the race that starts the Triple Crown. And you can't have a shot. I mean, the Preakness is great. If you win the Preakness, it certainly improves your value.
Sure.
The Belmont as well. But if you can get the Derby, you're set forever. And therefore, I can't imagine these big time owners that he trains for aren't going to migrate to a different stable to have that chance. And the first Saturday of May in 2022.
Boom. Well, Chris Block Racing Stable is open for business. So that's what they need to do.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they need to do. Chris, you do an amazing, I say it every time, I'm tired of saying it, to be honest with you, but you do an amazing job of explaining this. And, you know, I laughed the last time. Well, at least the horse doesn't know anything. I mean, you just, whatever, it is what it is. But it's truly amazing how well you break that down. And thank you so much for kind of explaining this and helping us understand better what's going on in that horse racing.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I enjoyed doing it, and I hope that people out there that love horse racing can understand and have a better understanding after we have these visits. And look, it's going to be interesting to have this talk and coming close to the 2022 Derby, because
yes,
it'll be without Baffert, so it'll be very interesting to see where some of these horses are going to be coming from.
Interesting. And if you ever have an idea, you know, if there's something that we're missing, well, I guarantee you we're missing it. If there's something that pops up, because I know there's some things going on in the state of Illinois as well, just let me know and we'll throw you back on, because I know I think you and I could go an hour on everything that's happening right now in Illinois, and I think a lot of us would be really interested in that, obviously for the gambling part of it too. But just let us know, Chris. We'll get you back on here, my friend.
I tell you what, guys, it's going to get real interesting here in Illinois over the course of the next 3 or 4 months. So once I know something, I'll be in touch.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Chris.
Anytime. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
All right, you too. That is Chris Block, Chris Block Racing Stable. He is, man, I tell you what, and he's kind of tried to, he and his brother Ryan and their dad have tried to explain a little bit what's going on right now in the state of Illinois. And it just continues to, not, I don't want to say it goes over my head, but it's, there's so many parts to it, and I think that's where it would be dangerous for me to even try to even get close to explaining it. So I think what we will do, like when Chris finds something out, we'll have him back on, because, I mean, again, I don't want to say horse racing's a niche thing, but there are a lot of people that certainly love horse racing. Guys like you and I, Pipes, when it comes, like you said, to the Derby, to the Preakness, to the Belmont, now all of a sudden, and especially if it's a horse that has a chance at a Triple Crown, it's kind of like World Cup soccer, which we're going to zing to here in a second with Cliff Rustrum. But it is one of those situations that when you get that, then all of a sudden everybody's interested in it.
That's right.
And so that we'll keep you updated on that. Speaking of our guy, Cliff from Urbana, what's up, buddy?
How we doing, sir?
Good. You are you're the resident soccer expert now. You've been anointed.
I'll take it.
And I'd rather let's not talk Cardinals baseball, because you and Pipes and I are big Cardinals fans, but let's don't even bring that up. Is that fair?
That's fine. You might have to go over to Illinois Field to find some pitchers for us, but that's not it.
Oh, man, it's terrible. It is terrible. Talk to me about this match yesterday between USA and Mexico. How big, from a general standpoint, how big of a win was that, or victory was that for the United States?
It was a massive victory. Now, is that tournament a big tournament? No, not by any means. It was something that was just created for countries like U.S. and Mexico in the CONCACAF to get more money in their pockets. It'd be like Illinois basketball going and playing in, not necessarily the Maui, but one of those preseason tournaments that gets you a little extra money.
Got it.
Gets you a little bit of extra exposure and things like that. But what was nice about it is if you look at the squad that the U.S. put out, other than the likes of Tim Ream, who's an older head, it was a very, very young crop of talent. And it's the guys that, sure, 2022 World Cup, you'll see them, but you're going to see them in their prime, hitting their stride in 2026 World Cup when the U.S. is hosting it, when Canada is hosting it,
nice.
And when Mexico is hosting it.
Cliff, we saw the intensity both on the soccer pitch and in the stands. Could you just, for those, I'm a casual soccer guy.
I've
become one through the pandemic and post. But the USA-Mexico rivalry, how big has that been? And then just what did we see transpire last night?
For people locally, it'd be like going to a Cubs-Cardinals game.
Got it.
Or an Illinois-Indiana basketball game. You feel it. You know it. You feel it in the crowd. But it's even more than that, because it happens maybe once a year. But it always means something. It means much more, too, because it could be your chance in the World Cup. It could be for a trophy like last night. And so it's Cubs-Cardinals. It's Illinois-Indiana hoops, but intensified. Maybe times two, times three.
Wow.
And I've been to it, and I went to it when it was in Columbus, Ohio. Now, it was a little different there because the U.S. was able to take care of the tickets to where not as many Mexico fans were allowed. But they're a different animal, you could say. They love their country. They love their football team more than any other. And when you go to Azteca, which is where we always play them, where the altitude is a lot like last night in Denver, it's very high, it's crazy, it's a different feeling. U.S. fans are put up in the very, very top, in a corner, caged in, police presence, SWAT team police presence, I should say.
Wow.
Riot shields and everything. And if U.S. scores, they're getting stuff thrown at them at Azteca. But we as fans are getting stuff thrown at us as well. And so that would be like a bucket. If you're a sports fan, that's a bucket list thing, because you're not going to experience anything like that at Busch Stadium or at Memorial Stadium, because it's just, you can't compare it.
That's incredible. I don't want any Cub fan throwing stuff at me, man. I'll rip this shirt off, Cliff, and go after him.
You know what, though? Like, the one I went to, they won, so it was probably a little different. Everybody was cordial. Everybody was
cool.
There was no issues, and I remember walking out of the stadium vividly upset, but they were celebrating, and they were pretty cool. Like, somebody gave me a beer, and I hung out and chatted with them for a while. So it's, you know, it's when you're in the moment and you're into the stadium and the environment and everything. It's just a little different.
That's fair.
Cliff, I got to ask you about.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, bud. You're good.
I got to ask you about Christian Pulisic.
Oh,
if you're a casual soccer guy or really into it, you've heard his name for Chelsea, just won the Champions League. How much confidence does he give you as a Team USA fan in him being the face or one of the faces of the future for Team USA?
It's hard to tell you that because I'm also a massive Chelsea fan. And when we got Pulisic, I wasn't overly thrilled because I knew the pressure was going to put on him. But also me as a fan, being the U.S. fanboy, I always want to see him play, but also you want to see your club do well. But I think he's done more than I expected already because if you, you know, if you're on Twitter, you follow the right people, you follow the right London people, they tell you how much they love him and how much they appreciate him. So he's been accepted over there. So that just tells you the impact that he's had over at Chelsea. Now, what can he do here? Well, he's only one guy. And so for Mexico, they can double, triple team him to where he can't do much. So it's also the guys around him, the guys like Josh Sargent, who is a St. Louis native, might be 20 years old, 21 possibly. He's playing over in Bundesliga in the German league. He's starting to get his feet wet. You've got Weston McKennie, who plays for Juventus now, which is in the Italian league. He's playing with Cristiano Ronaldo. He's playing in Champions League. He was the star last night. He was massive last night. And then you also have Giovanni Reyna, who was also one of the goal scorers last night. He's the son of Claudio Reyna, who is the U.S. Ooh. Men's national team legend.
Sure.
And he's only 18 years old, and he scored, and he's phenomenal. So it's not just Pulisic. It's everybody else behind him to also help him.
What was more impressive? The header by McKennie, I think he gets up 40 inch vertical for those that are all about basketball. Or backup goalie Ethan Horvath, 3-2 extra time. Now, as a casual guy, the guy kicked it kind of right at him. I mean, you got to decide whether you're going right or going left. But it's still that big of a moment to come into the game where the first string goalie gets hurt. What was bigger?
I got to go with Horvath. McKennie had some great headers, too. Because it wasn't just the one they scored on. He also had another one that Ochoa had a brilliant save on, too. But Horvath coming in, making that save, yeah, you got to guess left or right. But also, with VAR now, they emphasize it, too. You have to stay on the line. Goalkeepers used to come up off the line and then make their move and also try and make the penalty taker kind of look and see and guess. But they have to stay on that line. He did a great job of doing that because it can go to VAR and they can make a re-kick as well. So I got to give it to Horvath, but I got to give it to Pulisic as well, because in that moment of the penalty kick, you had Mexico's manager get red-carded. While that was going on, the Mexico players were scuffing up the dirt right by where the penalty spot was taken. You can see photos online, and you could see it live on the feed too, where it was a lot darker there by the spot. That's where they were taking their cleats, and they were just rubbing into that. So that way they're hoping that when Pulisic plants with his left foot before he's about to kick, maybe he slips up as he's taking it. But he blasted that thing top bins, no doubter. Nobody was stopping that thing.
Well, I mean, who is the kicker forever for the Broncos? Elam? He was learning from him. I mean, maybe that's what happened. All right, answer this one quick because I want to ask you about St. Louis. So the World Cup is not till 2022, but quarterfinals. The qualifying is like a month away, right?
A month away is the Gold Cup, so it's a tournament with all the CONCACAF teams again. It's kind of our biggest tournament outside of World Cup and World Cup qualifying. It's just you just don't have the intensity of it because you think of CONCACAF, it's not just Mexico, but it's Honduras, it's Costa Rica.
Got it.
It's all the small islands in the Caribbean, but I'll tell you what, when you got to go to those places in World Cup qualifying, you don't want to go there because you don't know the status of the place that you're playing. You have to win all your home matches against those teams because you don't know what you're going to come to see when you have to go to those countries. But also, you can't trust the refereeing. I mean, you saw it in the match last night. The CONCACAF refs are always known as being very dodgy. They can't control matches. And there's a lot of diving and things that teams do against, especially the U.S., to try and control the match, to try and keep it in their favor. And if they go ahead, you just see more diving than LeBron on a Saturday night on ABC. So it gets pretty bad.
But
at the same time, you have this summer, you have Gold Cup, and you're right about that. The problem with that is the likes of Giovanni Reyna, he's not going to be released because by the time it starts, which is July 10th, I believe, then Borussia Dortmund is almost starting their preseason camp.
Okay.
So they're not going to release him to play in it. I don't know if Chelsea are going to release Pulisic. I don't think so, because he said last night it was a nice cap off to the end of the season. So I'm assuming he's not going to get released. So with that being said, you're going to see more of the MLSers.